From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Planet X. Need I say anything more? And before I get going here with the program, I want to let you know that Dr. Robin Falco, our Coast to Coast regular guest, was slated to have colon cancer surgery on Tuesday. That has been postponed. Robin has come down with a chest cold, and she and her doctors have decided to hold off on that operation for now. We'll keep you on top of that story. The surprise decision by Eurozone leaders to part fund a bailout of Cyprus by taxing bank deposits has sent shockwaves through financial markets on Monday, with shares and the bonds of struggling Eurozone governments simply tumbling. The bloc struck a deal on Saturday to hand Cyprus rescue loans worth about $13 billion, but defied warnings, including from the European Central Bank, and imposed a levy that would see those with cash in the island's banks get hit between 6.75% and 9.9% interest on their own money that they probably have already paid taxes on. Catherine Austin Fitz with us. Catherine, an unbelievable story. Could it happen here?
Well, the three things, you know, one of the things going on in Cyprus, George, Cyprus is an offshore tax haven and has big deposits from the Russians. So we're watching a little bit of the politics over Syria and Russia going on at the same time. But what is unusual is that the EU and the IMF are proposing a tax on bank deposits that is sure to scare offshore deposits throughout the EU, particularly in the countries that are troubled. So the risk of contagion is really real. And, of course, you have people asking here, can it happen? Now, the United States situation is very, very different. We have the world's reserve currency, but we have the power to print our own currency. Cyprus, by joining the EU, you know, that's part of the problem. They don't have the same standing, and they've had special extraordinary expenses from a very serious military explosion they had in 2011. So put that all aside. What is important to understand is that if we have a government system where you and I think we're safe because we have guarantees, mm-hmm. and because we have guarantees and subsidy, we don't care that the whole thing is run cleanly and well and that the fundamental economy is okay, you know, that's a problem. And what we're seeing throughout the world is that I once had, in fact, it was a gentleman who became the lieutenant governor of New York, sit across from me at the jockey club, and he said, look, as long as I get government subsidies, what do I care if people have education and jobs? Well, we all need to care about whether people have education or jobs, because if the hole isn't healthy, then a government guarantee is just trading the deck chairs on the Titanic.
We're going to have to watch this. This is a major story, even though it's
this
a little island.
This is a tiny island, but it is a huge, huge story with major international, you know, implications, not just for the banking system globally and sort of the nature of government guarantees, but for the politics of the Middle East and Russia. We're talking about an offshore tax haven with major Russian deposits right off the Syrian shore.
Catherine, what's new with your website, Solari.com?
George, you know, we just every day I get up and I say, you know, things just keep changing. We're in for a wild ride. So the blog is an exciting time. This week we're doing a Solari report on how to do a Solari circle, because I always tell people, don't worry about if there is a conspiracy. If you're not in one, you need to start one.
You got it. Thanks, Catherine. Be in touch. Well, his name is Bo Jiang. He's a Chinese nationalist scientist employed by NASA, a contractor there for work for the space agency's Langley Research Center. He's been arrested by the FBI at the Dulles Airport as he tried to board a one-way flight to China. Why? It's alleged that the man had taken multiple NASA documents with him back to China on a trip in 2012, and who knows when. Gun enthusiasts are buying firearms with unparalleled rate. As a result, ammunition is now in very short supply nationwide. Even the big ammunition retailers are feeling the pinch. Walmart has the rationing of its ammo since January to 3 boxes per customer per day. And then the gun retailer like Cabela's, they get 2 or 3 shrink wrap pallets. They're cleaned off like locusts, as they say, within a couple of hours. What's going on with all of this? Let's check in with John Lott, author of More Guns, Less Crime. People are panicking again, John. What are they doing?
Well, it depends what part of the country you live in, but you could have good reasons for panicking. While everybody's kind of looking what's happened nationally, I don't think the odds are that they're going to pass anything at the federal level, but you see major changes occurring in different states. In Maryland, if you look at the costs of licensing and training, it may cost $400 to go and get a license to be able to own a handgun in your home. And, you know, you see taxes going on the purchases of guns in Colorado and Maine, Minnesota. It's all across the country. There's like 12 states where you could see it being significantly more costly for people to own guns after this year.
I remember a few years ago, John, that you would go to buy ammo and you'd have to wait in line. There was that shortage again of that fear factor that was out there. Is that fear factor back?
Well, I think so. I mean, it's basically started in November 2008. And we got a big increase after this last election. In fact, you could kind of see it as the polls would show that the probability that Obama would win this last time would increase, you would see increases in gun sales. They tracked each other quite closely.
All right, John, thank you so much. By the way, just to put this into comparison, some time ago to buy a box of 50 rounds for an assault rifle, the ammo cost you $12. It's up to $25 a box already, double. Australian experts are concerned about the threat of a new type of drug-resistant pandemic flu that is circulating in the population at large. The swine flu strain has learned how to simply dodge the antiviral Tamiflu, and though rare, is emerging outside of hospitals now. The team who studied it say that the virus is fitter than other drug-resistant strains, and the world should be on alert for possible outbreaks. The deepest place in the ocean is teeming with microscopic life, according to a study. International team of scientists found that the very bottom of the Mariana Trench, which lies about 7 miles down in the Pacific Ocean, had high levels of microbial activity. The research is published in the journal Nature. What does this all mean? Well, they once thought it was too hostile an environment for life to exist. Sounds like what could be happening on other planets. Maybe Europa. One of the moons of Jupiter. Astronomers are already getting set for the arrival of Comet Ison, which may become one of the brightest comets ever to be seen when it cruises through the inner solar system this fall. NASA has brought together a small team of experts to organize an observing campaign for the comet, which could potentially shine as bright as the moon when it makes its closest pass by the sun in late November. That's going to be something to see. And in an explosive new book, Exo Vaticana, authors Thomas Horn and Chris Putnam offer compelling evidence that the Vatican is positioning itself as a religious authority in anticipation of the imminent disclosure by world governments of the existence of extraterrestrial life. In a moment, we will be talking with one of the co-authors, Chris Putnam, about this incredible possibility. Next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Chris Putnam back with us here as we talk about this incredible story of the Vatican and possibly disclosure from governments. Chris, of course, best-selling author of the book, Petrus Romanus, The Final Pope. That's what we were talking with him about. They've got a blockbuster coming out called Exo Vaticana. And let's pull in Chris right now. Chris, how are you?
Hey, George, it's great to be back on the show with you.
Always a pleasure. So tell me about the possibility that we're going to, one, get disclosure, and two, the Vatican is preparing for it.
Well, George, you know, I think it's, you know, actually uncontroversial to state that the Vatican has positioned itself to be the religious authority given something like an alien disclosure event. They actually hosted an astrobiology conference in 2009, inviting the top secular scientists and the top people in the field to Rome to discuss these possibilities. In fact, if you recall, back in 2009, one of the principal keynote speakers was Dr. Chris Impey, a astrobiologist mm-hmm. at the University of Arizona, and he actually said in his address that they expected to be making an announcement in a few short years. And of course, that was 2009.
Well, this is going to be exciting if and when it happens. Look, we know that the Vatican came out a couple of years ago with the obvious statement that the belief in extraterrestrial life doesn't negate your belief in God. I found that to be an incredible statement, Chris. And I was thinking then, hey, what do they know? Or what are they going to talk about? And then as you've highlighted with some of the work you've done, the Vatican owns, what, a couple observatories, don't they?
Absolutely. There's a smaller one in Rome. But my co-author and I, Tom Horn, actually toured their facility on Mount Graham in Arizona. Now, what we're talking about at the Mount Graham International Observatory Complex is a state-of-the-art facility. In fact, there's three telescopes up on top of Mount Graham. There's the Vatican Advanced Technology Telescope, and then just a few hundred yards from that is the submillimeter radio telescope. And then just, you know, in the triangulation from there, we have the Large Binocular Telescope. Now, that happens to be the most powerful telescope in the world, bar none. You know, when it comes to telescope power, it's really the size of the mirror that gives it its light gathering and capabilities. Now, the Large Binocular Telescope gets its name because it has two huge mirrors. Now, the technicians there told us that telescope actually gets sharper images than the Hubble Space Telescope.
That's amazing.
And that's because those two mirrors can actually correct for the lensing effects that the atmosphere makes. So they can actually look deeper into space than the Hubble and get really sharp images. And a primary mission of that facility is to search for exoplanets and extraterrestrial life.
Now, with this search, I mean, what are they looking for exactly? I mean, how can you determine with a large telescope that there could be life out there?
Yeah, that's a good question. And, you know, what they're really looking for are what they consider the signatures that would make life possible. So, you know, when they're talking about looking for exoplanets, they have what they call the habitable zone, or perhaps another term is the Goldilocks zone. And what that means is that the planet is a comparable distance from its star as the Earth is from the Sun. So, you know, if it has a bigger star, it would have to be further away. If it has a smaller star, it'd have to be closer. So a comparable distance. And what they're looking for in that range is that it would be at the right temperature where it could actually hold liquid water. Okay, if it's too far away, the water freezes. If it's too close, the water evaporates. Now, you know, this kind of is based on a worldview assumption that I would challenge. And that assumption is, you know, if you have the right conditions and liquid water, that life just sort of pops into an existence. And, of course, I really seriously question that assumption because I think that life is really something that God did. I think that there is a creator, and I think that, you know, the intelligent design hypothesis is really necessary for true life to come into being. I don't really accept the notion that it just happens by accident.
No, you're right about that. If disclosure comes, Chris, why is it the Vatican's job to do it?
You know, I don't know that it is, but I think they have positioned themselves to do that. I mean, I think they're really trying to get out ahead of the curve. You know, I think they really have a bad taste in their mouth for the reputation they got with the Galileo incident. And, you know, so they're really trying to get out ahead of the curve. And this really explains their interest in science. Now, of course, when you're talking about the Vatican and the Roman Catholic Church, you're talking about the longest running institution or bureaucracy in world history. I mean, I think arguably, you know, they are the longest existing institution. So, you know, I suspect that they have records and knowledge of things that we don't necessarily know about. And now there have been a few people who have tried to get a hold of, you know, their documents concerning UFOs and their records. I think the attorney Daniel Sheehan, actually, when he was working for the Carter administration, requested those documents from the Vatican Library and was rejected twice, according to what I've heard him say. So it seems to me that they do know something that we don't.
Well, that's very, very possible indeed. The entire area is fascinating. Tell us about your work, of course, Exo Vaticana.
Well, you know, the thesis of our book, now, Tom Horn and myself are evangelical Christians, and, you know, we...
And what is that? To somebody who might not understand that.
Well, you know, we're believers in the New Testament. I mean, we're Protestants. We're not Catholics, but, you know, we believe that Jesus Christ is God incarnate.
Okay.
He came and died for the sins of the world. Now, the thesis of our book, you know, we tend to believe also that we are near his return. So the biblical prophecies talk about Jesus is going to return, and the book of Revelation really speaks a lot about the judgments that happen up to that time. Now, Jesus also predicted an unparalleled deception just prior to his return. Now, he said things like, you know, if those days had not been shortened, even the elect would be deceived. So we're expecting something to happen that's going to lead the world into a delusion. The Apostle Paul talked about a strong delusion that would lead the world to believe a lie. Our thesis is that for the world as it exists today to really buy into something that would be a demonic deception, it would really have to be clothed in the credibility of science.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the alien savior mythos has really been built up and promoted in our culture since the late 40s. There really is a really strong expectation of an alien savior. And even Carl Jung wrote about this. And, you know, that as the Christian consensus in the world started to fade away with the rise of rationalism and enlightenment thinking and, you know, the scientific worldview, a lot of people kind of lost their faith in the supernatural. They lost their faith in the biblical story. And so they began to adopt a worldview that had advanced extraterrestrials coming to save humanity. Now, you know, in the late 40s, there was the fear of a nuclear holocaust, you know, and this, of course, grew, you know, through the Cold War with Russia. And, you know, those fears are still there. Now, I'm sure you're aware, and most of listeners are, that, you know, there seems to be evidence that UFOs are interested in our nuclear facilities. And you know, some authors have covered, you know, in great depth how they have even perhaps shut down some of those facilities at times. So I think this is the sort of mythos that we're looking at, where perhaps, you know, that they're going to save us from ourselves.
The Hopis, you've talked a little bit about them and their blue star. What's the tie-in with the Vatican, if any?
Well, I think it's the same sort of thing, that there's a, you know, a kind of a mythology that there are these sky beings that are going to come and reappear on the earth to save humanity. And the thing that I'm looking at with the Vatican is that, you know, I don't necessarily think that they believe in UFOs per se in the same way that the ufologists believe it, but the sort of theology and the sort of things that they're writing and the constructs that they're developing are really undergirding something that, if it shows up, I mean, they already have the theology written. I mean, they've written things like, I'm talking high-level theologians from Notre Dame have written things like, well, you know, if there are alien beings, then chances are that they're more evolved than us, and they'll be evangelizing us, and we need to reread our theology in light of their revelation.
All right, Chris, stay with us. We're going to come back, talk much more about your work. Really, truly an incredible story where they claim the Vatican is preparing for official disclosure when the world tells us about advanced extraterrestrial intelligence. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We'll take your phone calls with Chris Putnam as we talk about his new work, of course, that is coming out. Chris, it's coming out on Tuesday, isn't it?
That's right. It's supposed to start shipping tomorrow.
That's exciting. I want you to theorize for a moment how the announcement will come about, if it comes about.
Well, George, one hypothesis that we've put forth in the book, now, you know, it doesn't have to happen this way, but there seems to be some evidence that suggests that large ships, I'm talking flying saucers, something maybe in the order of the Phoenix craft that was described as a mile-wide craft, could simultaneously manifest over Washington, D.C., Rome, and Jerusalem. Now, we found some evidence in history that sort of points us in that direction, and we unpack that in the book.
Well, if that happens, how do you think the world will react to it?
You know, George, I think it will be astounding, of course. I suspect that we will not see something along the lines of what happened, you know, with the world's thing with H.G. Wells that happened in the early 20th century where everyone panicked. And the reason I say that, I mean, I think that we've been prepared. I think that, you know, there's been a constant stream of science fiction and, you know, just movies and articles. And you know, we've had all the Ancient Aliens material on television. I think that there's been a concerted effort to prepare the world for disclosure, and I think that it's been intentional.
The Pope stepping down, the new Pope stepping in, do you think it had anything to do with this?
Well, we do think that all these things are connected. You know, the worldview that Tom Horn and myself hold, it doesn't leave a lot of room for coincidence and accident. And we think that, you know, there is a spiritual control system on the earth, and all these things are interrelated. You know, our first book was about the prophecy of the popes, and if that prophecy holds true, then this would be the final pope. You know, one of the things that I think is the most compelling about Pope Francis, now, of course, it remains to be seen how this is all going to play out, but he's the first Jesuit pope. And, you know, I think that a lot of people haven't fully come to understand what that entails. But these astronomers at the Vatican that, you know, that I kind of go back and forth with somewhat in the book, the Vatican Observatory Research Group. Now, this is made up of Jesuits. And these are all guys, you know, with, you know, you've talked to Father Guy Consamaga. Yeah, we go back and forth with him some and some of the things that they put forth. And, you know, so here our new pope is the first Jesuit pope. Now, I think that that's highly significant. One of the things that not many people in the media have been talking about, but if you recall, Father Malachi Martin wrote his first big book was called The Jesuits. In that book, it really begins. I'll have it right in front of me. I'll just read a sentence.
Okay, sure. Says, and they're very scientifically minded people.
Yes, they are. Now, Malachi Martin said a state of war exists between the papacy and the religious order of the Jesuits, the Society of Jesus, to give its order its official name. That war signals the most lethal change to take place within the ranks of the professional Roman clergy over the last 1,000 years. That's what Malachi Martin wrote in his first expose. Now, if that's true, and there was a war between the Jesuits and the papacy, what does the first Jesuit pope signify? That tells me the Jesuits won.
Well, exactly. Exactly. All right, back. Let's take some calls for you. Kevin is on Ontario, Canada. Welcome to the program, Kevin. Go ahead.
Hello, George. It's been a long time. Yes, I'd like to ask about if this, in fact, does happen, Mr. Putnam, have you guys considered the possibility of some sort of the Project Bluebeam plan, that this may, in fact, be a huge hoax by those that would wish a world government?
Yeah, I think that that's a really interesting idea. And, you know, that might, in fact, be a component in it. Now, what I argue in the book is actually, there's a post on my website right now that explains this in some detail, and it's linked at the show notes. But Jacques Vallée's take on the UFO phenomenon is that he really thinks that it's a control system meant to steer the worldviews and the public consciousness, basically the beliefs and, you know, the grid that we view reality through. And he really unpacks that in several of his books. But the first one that, you know, he really started in the book Dimensions, he explains it really well. But he thinks that, UFOs are really meant to steer culture. And, you know, interestingly, I kind of take that into the supernatural realm. I believe that there are fallen angelic entities that are managing that system. Now, could they be working through human confederates? Could they be working through, you know, the people that have designs on controlling a one-world government? They very possibly could, and that might be a technological manifestation the way they're doing that. So, you know, those ideas could actually work together.
Next up, we go to a first-time caller, Ben, in Bangor, Maine. Hey, Ben, go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I was just wondering, what do you think about, like, a modern version of the Epiphany story?
Explain a little more.
Well, you know, three kings and a town and star overhead.
All right, how does that tie into that?
Well, you think of the three kingdoms would be Israel and Iraq and Afghanistan.
All right, what do you think of that tie-in, Chris?
I'm not exactly sure where he's going with that, but he's talking about heralding...
Kind of metaphorical, you know, I guess.
The arrival of the Messiah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think that what we're expecting, what we're, you know, our trajectory with the UFOs and the alien disclosures, that we think that this is really going to be, you know, a false Messiah, what the Bible predicts as the Antichrist, which meaning instead of Christ. So we really think that there's going to be a diabolic ruse that leads the world to worship a false god, and it's going to be in the guise of an extraterrestrial.
Chris, are you saying that the announcement is going to be legitimate, that we're being visited, or a hoax to trick us?
Well, my trajectory, my thesis is that, you know, it's not necessarily a hoax, but, I mean, that it is a false Messiah. I don't necessarily buy that it's going to be an alien from another world. I really think that we're probably looking at some sort of fallen angel type entity that will come in the guise of a benevolent extraterrestrial here to solve all our problems. I think this is the sort of thing that Jesus Christ warned us about. And that's why, you know, I hold that view. He predicted an unparalleled deception. And, you know, it says that this Antichrist figure will proclaim himself to be God. Now, you know, when I look around at our culture and you know, how skeptical people are and how scientific we are, it's really hard for me to believe that the world's going to buy into that as some kind of supernatural claim to be God. But someone who claims to be a, you know, an alien from another world with a superior technology that can solve all our problems, I think that has a lot more explanatory scope for why the world would buy into something like that.
Well, I think you're right there. Okay, next up, East Jimmy in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hi, Jim. You're on with Chris Putnam on Coast to Coast.
George, I got an eerie feeling whenever I heard the guest talk about these giant ships, because I've had a friend of mine who told me about a very vivid dream where he woke up at 3 a.m. in a cold sweat, and he remembered seeing these giant ships over the cities on the TV, and he was trying to call me. And I myself have had a sighting right here. Sorry.
Yeah, that's right.
In Western Pennsylvania. So I'm a little bit.
You think it could happen?
Goosebumps, George. It could happen.
Well, now
I've seen some.
Remember the movie Independence Day? It was like that.
Yeah, it was almost like that movie was, you know, pre-programming for everyone.
What did you think of that movie, Chris, and its tie into the possibility of this reality?
Well, George, you know, one of the things that I found the most astounding after all my research into UFOs, you know, reading all the latest books, Leslie Keene's book, Richard Dolan's books, is that things like that have happened. And most of the world is ignorant to it. I mean, what happened in Phoenix, Arizona? We have Governor Fife Symington giving his testimony. You know, here he was an Air Force officer and governor of the state, and he's talking about a huge ship over Phoenix, and he says it definitely was not anything out of this world that I've ever seen. You know, there was a similar event over Belgium where Air Force officials, military officials, you know, they saw these huge ships. You know, one of the things that I uncovered in the research for this book, it's rather astounding because of the parallels. In 1978, it's the famous year of three popes. It's when Paul VI died. They elected John Paul I. He only lived 33 days as pope, and then they elected John Paul II. There was a massive UFO flap over Rome right during that brief pontificate of John Paul I. In fact, there were so many UFOs seen, it made the New York Times News Service in America in 1978. And, I mean, it was just a huge flap all over Europe. People talked about seeing a craft shooting down a green beam of light. Fishermen in Italy went missing. So I actually have the clipping from the New York Times in 1978, and we put that in the book. It's also up at my website. But, you know, it's astounding to me that huge sightings like that have happened, and most people are oblivious to it.
Well, maybe they are. Now, you sent us, of course, a couple links that we've got posted at coasttocoastam.com. But also, tell me about this YouTube video, which incredibly highlights some of the best video of UFOs I've ever seen.
Well, this is the promotional video for our book, Exo Vaticana, and it's linked at my site. It's linked at the website, www.exovaticana.com. Now, interspersed with various clips of UFO footage, some of it from NASA, some from various UFO encounters, are Tom Horn, my co-author, and myself touring the Mount Graham Observatory facility. So you will actually see us walking around inside the Vatican Advanced Technology Telescope facility. You'll see us being shown the Lucifer instrument. The Lucifer instrument is actually a infrared camera which is attached to the large binocular telescope. It's a rather forced acronym that means large binocular telescope near infrared spectroscopic utility with camera and integral field unit for extragalactic research. Now, you know, forgive me, but it seems like they really went to exorbitant lengths to make an acronym for Lucifer.
Next up, we go to Charles in Los Angeles. Welcome to the show. Hi, Charles.
Yes, good evening. Good evening, guys. I have a friend that's been all over the galaxy since he was young, and he lived in Sirius B in another lifetime. That's where Jesus of Nazareth was from. These ships up there are real. They've been watching us for centuries. This is the time they will be coming to wake up everybody. Pretty soon they're here to help us. Any holograms, the United States, I think that'll be shut down. So that's no concern. They're here to help us and probably more spiritual than anyone you've ever met. 40% of them look like us. 60% do not. I've been in three classes with Ashtar, and he's the commander of the entire Galactic Federation fleet. So there's no need to be concerned about problems with him, you know, making themselves. Also, Steve Bassett and Steve Greer are coming out with a film called Sirius.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Steve's going to be on the show pretty soon.
April 22nd, yep. Yeah.
All right, thanks, Charles.
Okay.
All right, let's go next to Bozeman, Montana. Joel's with us, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Joel.
Okay, Joel, I want to tell you why I don't believe. Thanks, first of all, for taking my call.
Oh, sure thing.
But I want to explain why there is really and truly no such thing as alien to some other planet.
All right, tell me why.
All right, because you see, and I appeal to all the good, I'm a Catholic, but I appeal to all the good Protestant Christians out there too, and I think if they really truly believe in Jesus Christ the proper way, they'll believe the same way. Jesus died once for all. He died for the people on earth. He's in that earning our salvation as he did in his wonderful act of love for the Heavenly Father. Didn't win, there just isn't any God-created life on this earth, and to this day, you don't have anything substantial to prove that there's anything alien, anything truly from other planets, any kind of life of any kind. You don't have anything substantial that would stand up in a court. And let me ask you one other thing. Back when Father Malachi Martin used to be on with Art Bell one night, and I actually have this on tape downstairs if you want me to find it and play it someday for you. Art Bell asked, or he couldn't call him Father. He always called him Doctor, I believe. And he's asked him what he thought of all this activity, you know, aliens and kidnappings and all this. And Father Malachi answered him, and I quote, he said, demonic activity.
Yeah, he believed that they were demons. Well, as you've said, Chris, they could be from just about any walk of life, couldn't they?
That's right. And, you know, caller, I really share your hypothesis there. That is basically what I argue in the book as well. Now, one thing I would like to say is that, you know, the Bible is kind of silent on whether God created other beings or not. It doesn't specifically address that issue. But to be honest with you, I consider that a separate matter. And the reason why is that in studying the UFO phenomenon, I see a large level of deceptive activity, of lies. I mean, if you read the accounts, you know, 30 years ago, all the aliens were telling the contactees they were from Mars and Venus. Well, now that we know better, they're all from Alpha Centauri or somewhere like that. They always stay one step ahead of what the belief is of the culture. And, you know, that's why I really do study Jacques Vallée's work extensively, because I think he has a really good assessment of what this phenomenon is all about. I mean, he writes books with names like Messengers of Deception.
Mm-hmm, right.
So that, you know, that's my trajectory as well.
Chris, give out your website if you would, please.
Certainly. It's www.logosapologia.org. That's LOGOSAPOLOGIA.org. And the book is exovaticana.com.
You got it. Chris, thanks so much. Stay in touch with us. You've always been a great guest here on Coast to Coast AM. In a moment, Marshall Masters joins us as we talk about Planet X.